Jessica Rector, your host and founder of This Man Thing, where we help men be authentic through their communication, thoughts, and actions. We help them play bolder, think bigger, and be better in order to gain more freedom, confidence, and success. You can find us at thismanthing.com. You can also join our free Facebook group at thismanthing.com/groups, where men are having real conversations and building much needed community, support, camaraderie with other men. My guest today is Steve Horsman. He is the founder and head coach of Good Guys to Great Men Coaching. His program provides eye-opening training and mentoring to help men become the powerful, confident, passionate man they secretly want to be. His clients make enormous breakthroughs in their relationship struggles with women, and they finally feel they are confidently in control of their lives, sexuality, and happiness. Please help me give a warm welcome to Steve. Thanks so much for joining Steve.
Thank you, Jessica. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, well, we're excited to have you. Tell us a little bit about you, a little bit about your background and the journey which led you on to having and being a head coach, but having Good Guys to Great Men Coaching.
Sure. In a nutshell, I'm a 55-year-old white guy who seemed to have a normal life, but the guys I work with tend to be almost exactly like me. They're between 35 and 60, and they've been setting the world on fire in their work. They've had a pretty successful life. They're pretty good at what they do. They're confident outside the home. But in their relationship, in their long-term committed relationship, they're hitting the wall. And some of these guys are on the verge of divorce, trying to avoid divorce. But one thing they know is true, that the confidence that they feel outside the house is nothing like the eggshell walking they do when they get inside the house. They feel intimidated. They feel inferior. They feel small. And so I got into the coaching business because I got divorced after 28 years. And the reason I made this my mission is because I found out there were things our fathers didn't tell us. And when I got into this body of study about men and women and physiology, sexuality, there's so many things that our fathers didn't tell us. And the lights come on for men when they start to learn this. And the thing is, most of us don't try to learn until we feel some pain. And that's when I usually find men in pain, which is where I was when I got into this. I've been doing it for 4 years now, and I talk to men around the world. And I can't think of anything I'd rather do than be here today talking to you about it.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for being here. So what are some of these things that men's dads did not teach men about?
Some of the things that we don't know, first of all, it's a matter of empathy. We grow up as young boys thinking that if we can only get a gold star from a kindergarten teacher, elementary school, junior high, from our girlfriends in high school, and if we get married, all we want is gold stars from women, which tends to feed the myth that if we keep women happy and we please them, we'll be fine and we'll get everything we want. Men will use words like happy life, happy wife, happy life, or if mom ain't happy, nobody's happy. And those are the kind of messages we got over the last few decades. And it set us up to think that we're on a pedestal lower than her, that if all we do is keep her happy, we're going to be okay. And what I found is it's created a few generations of men who are playing very, very small and have a very, very tough problem with confidence and dealing with women, especially the romantic partners.
And that's so interesting. Somebody in the group just put this video up, and it was about someone in the video was saying that women are up on a pedestal. And of course I was like, what? Like, I totally disagree with that. There's like, I don't want to be on anyone's pedestal, but I also don't want men to feel like they need to put women on a pedestal, because I think that also allows men to feel less than, right? And they're not. I don't buy into the those cliches that you were saying about the wife being happy or the mom being happy and everything's going to be amazing, because then I feel that men are walking on eggshells and trying to be and portray themselves as someone that they're really not, just to ensure that the wife or the mom is happy.
Yeah. And we learn this from a very, very young age. This is the thing I try to tell men when they hit the pain point, is that they didn't see it coming. We've been doing it since we were kindergartners. And it's just part of the social structure that has been created over the last few decades. So when the light comes on, when you find out you don't have to do that, I'm creating a training course called Is Your Foot Stuck Under the Pedestal You Put Her On? And this is about the apologetic man, the man who always lives thinking that she is on a pedestal. She always has been. And if I can only get out from under it, maybe I can feel better, more confident. And so I talk about the unapologetic man, learning to stop apologizing for being a man and for wanting what you want in life. I know this is what you teach as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the thing is I feel like when you're constantly apologizing, you start to look in the mirror and you forget to recognize who you are. You forget who you are because at the core of it, you don't know. You've been too busy trying to be someone else or trying to live up to someone else's expectations or trying to, tweak and adjust yourself and mold yourself into who you think others want you to be, or, you know, the opinions that will agree with your wife, so you don't create conflict because you're trying to make her happy. And where does that leave you? That leaves you miserable and unhappy, and you have no idea who you are at your core because you've spent too many years trying to be someone that you're not, right?
Oh, I love it. I love it. Everything you said, I love it. That's right. I recently wrote an article. It was a 30-day challenge for men who find themselves saying, I'm sorry a lot. Yeah. I'm sorry. And what it does is create this energy of a little boy. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for you being mad. I'm sorry if you're upset. I'm sorry if you got bad news. I'm sorry your day was bad. I'm sorry I want sex. I'm sorry I'm attracted to you. I'm sorry I just wanted to help you. I'm sorry for being a man. I'm sorry for having a dick. I'm sorry. It's all those things that make us so unattractive in our own skin. We know we hate it when we're doing it. We can't stand the way it feels inside our body when we're doing it, yet we can't stop because we think it's what she wants to hear. It's what will make her happy. And the other thing that our fathers didn't tell us is that apologetic men who play small and don't own their confidence, they're extremely unattractive and unsexy to women. And it's you can say that to a man, but it won't make him stop tomorrow. He'll still go back to doing it until he understands why he's doing it, how he got there, and understand how good it feels the next day when you decide, you know what, I'm going to stop doing this. I am going to start doing something different.
You gave me goosebumps as soon as you said that, so unattractive to women, because that's how I feel as a woman, that men who are not confident, you know, it's not about arrogance, it's not about ego, but men who aren't confident, who don't know who they are, who are not self-aware, who will, you know, say how high, ask how high when I say jump, those are not appealing men to me. It may be because people label me as a strong, independent woman, but I want a guy who is self-assured, who is confident, who plays bigger, who has dreams, who's willing to go after that. And I think when men recognize that's an appealing trait, I would think that they would want to do it more. But if they don't know that they're really doing it, or they don't know what's at the core of them apologizing it, where do they start? How do they go about getting on this journey of changing that thought process?
Two things. I get them to admit that when they are in their mojo, especially at work, I take them back to work, something that they're really confident in. Men tend to be very confident in things that they know they're competent in. Mm. And usually we'll go to the work setting and we'll think about that feeling of mojo and feeling in control, and you got your balls in your hands and you're just feeling good. You think of those moments, it's because you realize that you know something and that you're good at something. Then you come home and the door shuts behind you, and all of a sudden you lose all that confidence because you're not good at this. So the realization, the switch flips when you find out this is a skill. The reason you don't have this skill is this socialized, insidious thing that happened to most of us men born in the 60s and 70s, where we went through a system of seeking gold stars, seeking validation, affection, approval, and sexual satisfaction at the only people who control it in the whole world, women, right? Women, those bitches, they're the ones who control everything. And all they can say no, and they can reject me. And if I could only make them happy and win the gold star, my life will be good. So once a man starts to hear this story and he does some of the research with me and finds out why he's here, I want him to sit back, put his hands behind his head and laugh and go, wow, this is bullshit, right? I want him to laugh and go, I could change this, couldn't I? And that's the realization that when a man knows he can change his circumstance by changing his perspective, everything changes for him. And then capability and competence starts to come in. And then we enter the process of change. And that's when shit hits the fan with his woman. When she starts to see he's becoming aware of his own value and he's not apologizing and he no longer puts her on the pedestal, she's simultaneously attracted to it and threatened at the same time because she doesn't know what to do with this guy, right?
So two things came up for me. How and why do men go from very, very confident at work to being almost a scared little boy at home? Like, meaning not confident, not sure. Like, how, what is that switch that happens? Because in my mind, I'm thinking they're confident at work, they're confident at home, like they're walking around in confidence all the time. So what happens? You say they walk through the door and basically they become someone totally different. How and why does that happen?
Their belief system changes when they walk in the door and it closes behind them. Their entire belief system about who's in control, who has the power, and their feeling of competence and worthiness changes the second they walk in the door. They can control all of those things at work, their own sense of power and control and authority and competence and contribution. They know their value at work. They question their value at home because they're looking at her as the source of verification that he is a man of value. He's a confident, competent, sexual man of worthiness. A lot of men have one gauge at home that tells them whether or not they're good enough or not. Mm. And that one gauge on their dashboard has her face on it. Mm. And there's only one needle, and it goes between she loves me and she loves me not. And if he walks in the door and he's feeling that she doesn't love me, his whole sense of well-being and confidence drops through the bottom. And then he starts walking on eggshells, avoiding landmines and jumping through hoops just to see if he can get her planets to align to like him again. She can tell he doesn't like himself.
Do you think that men feel so confident and competent at work because they maybe have never felt that confident with women? And so they've spent years trying to overcompensate for that, for what they can control. And that just happens to be the work environment. Do you find that to be the case a lot?
I think that's brilliant. Yeah, I think that's exactly it, because it's an arena where we have control. And even if we have a woman boss, we still have ability to be good at what we do. And so yeah, when we come into the romantic, committed, long-term relationship, we have a different training level. We've been trained to believe that we don't have the power and we better simmer down. We better play small. And we're on our heels all the time in that situation. So man needs to know how to go from heel to toe in the romantic realm, just like he does at work. I love that, Jessica. That was perfect analogy.
Oh, I'm a genius. I'll tell you, Steve. That was just genius.
Obviously.
That was kidding. But so here's the thing that's resonating with me when you're saying that I'm really picking up on. And you're not saying this, but this is what I'm picking up on, is that it really comes down to a man's self-worth, right? Because if he knew wholeheartedly that he was worth being treated with respect, that he had value to this world, that he mattered, that his opinion mattered, that, you know, that this world needed him, that this relationship needed him, he would have absolutely no problem standing up for himself in a relationship. He would have no problem standing in his power in a relationship, speaking his voice. And so what I'm hearing you say, again, you're not saying it, what I'm hearing is that that men don't have high self-worth when it comes to relationships. Is that accurate? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would change one thing, is that the way we measure our self-worth in relationships, I'm talking about committed long-term romantic relationships, the way we measure it, the way we assess our worthiness is through the eyes of other people, especially her. We tend not to do that outside the relationship. We tend to have enough mojo and confidence to know that we're doing okay outside, but we grant her the power of approval, affirmation, and validation. And we've been trained to do that, that if she's not happy with us, we must not yet be good enough. And so what you said is spot on, balls on accurate, and that we, until we understand that we are a man of value, until we go through the process, the work required to understand that we are worthy with or without her approval, and that the value we bring to the relationship socially, financially, sexually, emotionally, that our value stands on its own without her liking us. We're always going to be measuring our value by her impression of us, which is a losing proposition.
I was going to say, but you'll never measure up. You're going to be disappointed every single time because there's always going to be something wrong. There's always going to be something that you can do better, or you should have known, or you didn't do. Or so that's a no-win scenario. And so you're going to go through the whole relationship life, so to speak, miserable because there's nothing you can do that's going to make you perfect, quote unquote, in her eyes. There's always going to be some way that you could have, should have, would have done better, or tweaked things or adjusted something. So that's a losing battle. And I guess what it's hard for me to wrap my brain around is when I'm thinking of it is that I guess it's because I never thought of men being in relationships in that way, like meaning that I thought that they kind of had the power in relationships, or it was equal power in relationships. And so it's fascinating to me that all along I've held the power, and I've never known I've held the power. But then again, I've never necessarily wanted to hold the power, right? I've wanted it to be equal partnership, so to speak, and not I have the power and everything I says goes. But how is that the situation? Because I believe that if you're in a situation like that, that has got to take a toll on how you see yourself. It has to take a toll on how you show up, not just in the relationship, but in your work and in your life and in the world. So how does a man keep that? Because if they're going into work confident, how does he kind of keep that insecurity just in relationships? How does it not translate over into other aspects of his life?
Oh, I think it typically does. The reason I focus on the relationship part, because when a man does the relationship work, he finds out he's been holding back at work as well. Mm-hmm. He's also been playing the nice guy at work. Mm-hmm. He still is trying to be like, he doesn't ask for promotions. He doesn't push as hard as he can. He's a little bit more apologetic at work. Mm-hmm. He doesn't feel as tweaked or as triggered because he's not feeling emotionally rejected. He's not feeling sexually rejected, which are huge triggers, right?
Yeah.
But they tend, when they find out, when they do this work and they become confident in their skin with their woman, they go back to work and they become a better leader. They become a stronger father. They become more active in speaking out. They take charge of things in ways that they didn't before because they know they don't have to be an asshole to be a leader. Just like with the woman, you don't have to be an asshole to lead her toward positivity and sexuality and connection. The myth is that only the bad boys are liked by women. Only the bad boys get the girls because girls will always give in to the asshole. Well, what girls really want is the guy you described who's full of self-affirmation and confidence, and he stands up for himself, but he knows how to be compassionate, loving, sexy, and empathetic. So you blend those two together and you're unstoppable.
So do you think that it shows up in a man in every way in him actually using the words, I'm sorry, or are there other ways that it shows up that he's this type of person, but he may not actually say those words, quote unquote, I'm sorry every time?
Yeah, and this is the hardest thing for women to understand. I had a long phone call with a couple the other day out of this country, and I was trying to get her to understand that when anger shows up in a man, when his insecurity and his frustration and feeling of rejection manifests, it comes out as anger. It comes out as big shoulders, red face, throwing things, kicking things, yelling, slamming doors. And women are terrified of that shit, right? Because we can hurt women. Our upper body strength is legendary. So when anger shows up, a woman can almost always know that his 13-year-old little boy inside him is kicking his ass. Mm. And what all he wants is to feel good enough at that moment. But it's too scary for her. Most women are not evolved enough or present enough to feel safe enough to lean right into the 13-year-old boy, grab him by the belt, pull him in, kiss him on the chin, and say, I see you. I understand. You're okay.
Wow, that's powerful.
A man, Yeah, to let a man know that you see the little boy and that the anger you don't take as a personal threat, because this guy that I was talking to, he would never touch his kids or his wife. She didn't know that in her body. Her body told her that he could hurt me.
God, that is powerful. I mean, you totally just gave me a visual of a woman in that moment doing that. And here's what also happens. It interrupts the guy's pattern, right? Because when you're angry, a lot of people who are angry want people to engage, right? They want that battle. They want the fight. They want, and when you pull him in, kiss him on the cheek or the chin or wherever, and say, hey, I see you, that interrupts that pattern and it diffuses the situation, right? And that takes him back a step and say, oh, okay. And the first time you do it, he probably won't even know what to do with that. But I would guarantee it would stop the anger right there in its tracks.
You're right. But it's scary, isn't it? It's scary to do for a woman. But if she does it right, probably make him cry right there. Probably make the little boy just cry, which shows vulnerability. He doesn't want her to see that, but he wants to be seen. He wants to know that, her to know that he's angry, because not that he's aggressively threatening her. It's because he feels insecure. He feels unseen. He feels insignificant.
And he wants to be heard, right? Everybody tells me, Jessica, what you do is the impossible. You work with men. Like, you get them to talk. You get them to be vulnerable. And I say, hey, it's not that hard. Guess what? Men want to be heard. All they need to know is that it's a safe place and that you're actually listening. That's the key, that you're actually listening and that you care, that they're going to be met with compassion and empathy. But what usually happens, and men know because, you know, it's a pattern, that they try and open up and they're shot down, right? They're rejected. It ends up in a fight. You know, a woman brings up something from 6 months ago and they're like, wait, what is that? I thought we dealt with that. You know, it ends up becoming something that it wasn't even about. And so men go, okay, I'm going to put that wall right back up that I've had up for 20 or 30 years. I'll go ahead and put that back up and I will not open up again. Duly noted, I learned my lesson. I don't get a compassionate, empathetic response. So I'm going to go ahead and not do that again. And then they close back up. But if they know they're going to be met with compassion and empathy, if they know that you're there to really hear them and to love them and accept them and understand them, even if you don't agree with them, they're going to learn that they can do it again and again and again because it's a safe place. But women, I believe, are not taught how to create that safe place. I believe.
you just hit the nail on the head. You know what every man hearing this right now, hearing this podcast, is thinking as they hear you say that? They're shaking their head going, yeah. But Jessica, you don't know my wife. The thing is, there are not a lot of Jessica Rectors out there that men are married to. There's just not that many.
Well, and here's the kicker. She's single, so I'm fully aware.
Good. Public service announcement, guys.
Yes, thank you.
The thing is, there aren't. Having that many evolved, emotionally strong, feminine, powerful women, it's just beginning. The society's just now starting to create those as we're creating men who are the same. And so my business with men is that I know your wife is not Jessica Rector. I know she could never do what we talked about on the podcast. This is why manning up, forgive the phrase, manning up. This is why being a man in what I teach means grabbing your own balls, understanding her background, her history, understanding her fear, understanding that when you slam the door when you come home, you have just set the tone for the environment for the rest of the evening. You're the weatherman in your house. You have the ability and the power to create good feelings or bad feelings, and it starts with you.
I have to also say, it's just as much as a man's responsibility as it is a woman's responsibility. If there are not enough Jessica Rectors out there, meaning if women are not compassionate and empathetic, they need to teach themselves how to be. That is not an excuse. Like, it is time for women to be enlightened and to treat men the way that they want to be treated. Because guess what? There are plenty of women out there who have no problem with saying, I want compassion and empathy when I talk to my husband. I don't want him shutting me down. I don't want him telling me no. I want him to listen. I want him to understand that. But yet, When the roles are reversed, they don't do the same thing for the man. They expect the man to be big and strong and to not cry and, you know, to be tough. And yet, guess what? Men have feelings too. I know. Whoa, light bulb moment. Men have feelings too. And they want to talk about them. They do.
Yeah.
And for women to not meet them with compassion and empathy, that's on the woman. That's not on the man. Right. That's on the woman. You know?
And absolutely.
So the man can walk through the door and close the door as opposed to slamming the door shut. Absolutely. But yet the woman also has to acknowledge that if a man does slam the door shut, what's wrong, honey? I want to talk about this. Like, what's going on? How can I help you? Don't always expect him to go, oh, so this is what happened on my day today, because they're not going to do that, right? And so women need to be there for men, just like women expect men to be there for us. So that's, you know, that is not an excuse. And I think that we have to hold women more accountable. We have to hold them to educating themselves. If they don't know, there's plenty of tools and resources out there. You know, there are plenty of books that they can get their hands on. The thing is that they've gotten away with it for too long. And people just shove it in the rug and say, oh, okay, well, my wife doesn't do that. She's not just correct, or, but she can be.
Right, right.
That's the bottom
and
line.
Yeah, there's, we talk a lot about how do you hold a partner accountable? I mean, without threatening and being intimidating, how do you model the behavior that you expect of yourself and for yourself in such a way that you can inspire your partner to want to change themselves? Mm. No man is going to walk into the kitchen tonight and shut the door and all of a sudden say, oh, I listened to this podcast today, honey. You need to step up and get your shit together, right? That she's not going to take that
one. Awesome, though, if he did do that.
I know. There is a time and place for that. And what I teach, there is a time and place for confrontation and even ultimatums. But in most cases, marriages, you don't have two compassionate, evolved, mature people tonight at 6 p.m., right? That's not going to happen in the kitchen. Somebody's dysfunctional. Somebody's triggered. Somebody's feeling down. And what I say, anthropologically speaking, I believe men have a bit more intestinal fortitude to think about their thoughts, to think about how they want to think, to think about how they want to respond, to think about what kind of man do they want to be with or without this woman in his life. Who am I? What do I stand for? And where the fuck am I going? Excuse the F word. You can edit that. When he knows that, when he's confident, when he walks in, it doesn't matter if she's having a shitty day. It doesn't matter if she's a bitch. It doesn't matter if she's not holding herself accountable, because he knows he's a happy, joyous, loving, valuable, sexual man.
Yes.
And she doesn't define his worthiness. And from that point, he can respond to her in a strong, loving, compassionate way, and also bold and confrontational if he needs to, if she starts becoming horribly toxic or dysfunctional. Believe me, I know what goes on behind closed doors, but by a man saying, I shouldn't have to try so hard, she should be more accountable, he's abdicating his responsibility to not give a shit. His responsibility is to not give a shit about what anybody does around him, because their behavior does not impose on him behavior. He can be who he wants to be. And when you live that life, I promise you, when a man has that switch go on, confidence comes back, competence comes back, competence. He feels like he's king of the world, and all he wants is his queen to join him, that queen that you described, that accountable, loving, compassionate queen. She can be inspired when she sees him come out without negotiation, that he isn't waiting for her to make the first move, and he's willing to do it because he doesn't give a shit anymore. Mm-hmm. That's what I teach.
Yeah, and but women also have to want that for themselves. I mean, it's about the relationship. At first, it's about herself, or it's about himself. They have to work on themselves and figure out who they are, to become self-aware, to gain the confidence that, you know what, if I have this amazing person in my life, awesome, but if I don't, it doesn't define me. There was a video that I was watching that says, a man is not a man without a woman. And I, of course, I was like adamantly against it. I was like, what? Like, if somebody told me that, Jessica, you're not really a woman unless you have a man, that would be completely and utterly insulting to me, because I haven't had a man most of my adult life. And so you're saying I'm less of a woman because I don't have a man. And I think the same is true for a man. Can a woman, the right woman, make a man a better person? Yes, because iron sharpens iron, right? But the wrong person could also be a huge detriment in your life. And I don't think that having a man or a woman in your life makes you a better, quote unquote, man or woman. It can make you a better person. And so I think the man needs to be secure, confident, competent, whether there's a woman there or not. Because then he can go out, and as that, he can go out and find the right woman for him if there's already not one there, if that's what he's longing for.
Yeah. Amen, sister. Amen. I love everything you said. The thing you got me thinking about is an ebook that I'll talk about later, a free ebook that guys can get. There's this secret, the hard-to-swallow secret to saving your marriage. And the hard-to-swallow secret I'll give away here is that if you are more afraid of the idea of not being with this woman, divorce, separation, or whatever, if you are more afraid of that than you are of creating the future, an uncertain future alone, you're going to be in big trouble. So I talk about the fear of divorce, fear of separation, fear of being rejected. If you fear that on a scale of 1 to 10, between 8, 9, or 10, you're kind of screwed. Because even if you know that there's no way I'm going to live another 30 years like this, like if you just had the worst year of your life in your marriage, and you say, on a scale of 1 to 10, there's zero chance I am going to live another 30 years like this, but your fear of divorce is like an 8, 9, or a 10, you're going to feel like you've got your foot on the brake and you're putting your foot on the gas and you're spinning your wheels and you feel stuck, frustrated, confused, and you don't know what to do. And so what I help men do is reduce their fear of divorce, because the only way you can save a marriage typically is to start acting bigger, stronger, more confident, more deliberate, more loving, more sexual, more everything instead of less of everything, which is what we do when we get to 8, 9, or 10 on the fear factor.
Wow.
That's counterintuitive.
Yeah. And so what if a guy is feeling that way, that he's in limbo, he's scared, what is he to do? What can he do?
He needs to call you, or he needs to call me, because what he needs to do is get to the bottom of the fear, the gut-wrenching, not in the gut fear of what it means about him if he was to confront the situation. What would it mean about him if he wasn't married to her or live in the same house with his kids anymore? Because those underlying fears, those negative consequences of standing up for yourself is what makes men play small. They need to talk to somebody like you or me and to find out why do I have this fear? Why do I measure my well-being and my happiness by how much I put up with crap?
Yeah.
And the thing is that he secretly doesn't know that she secretly disrespects him and doesn't trust him and is unattracted to him because he is acting that way, because he is playing small and he's not standing up. It's
so
really counterintuitive.
What is something that if a guy is listening, he can identify himself in? If he's like, I don't really think I say I'm sorry that much. What is a sign that he can pick up on, that he'd go, okay, well, that's me. Because, you know, it's like, I don't know, that's not me. I don't say I'm sorry that much. Oh, I don't think I play that small. What is something that, give me an example that if they do, or what are some clear signs that they can look for that they can say, okay, that is me.
Yeah. Here's the one that I always bring up. I call it the hummingbird husband, because if he's the guy I think he is, even if he's not saying I'm sorry, he's quietly tied up about her not liking him, not paying attention to him, not approving of, not giving him sex. He's quietly upset and nervous and anxious over that. So he becomes a hummingbird husband compared to the mountain lion, which is who I train. I train men to be mountain lions. The hummingbird husband, his trademark is asking questions. So that's the answer to your question. If he's saying, what's the matter with you? Where are you going? Why did you say that? When are we going to have sex? Who are you talking to? All these badgering hummingbird interrogation questions, it shows your insecurity and your lack of faith in yourself. It drives her out freaking wall. She can't stand it. So I say, if you hear your lips forming a W word, like who, what, where, when, why, if you hear yourself doing that, that's a sign that you're a hummingbird husband and it's time to stop asking questions. Another challenge is go 7 straight days without asking your wife a question about why did she say something, or why is she so mean, or who is she talking to, or when is she going to kiss you, or all that stuff. Make statements. A mountain lion of a man makes statements. He'll say, you know what? You're a beautiful woman. I love you, right? He might make a statement, you know what? I'm horny tonight and I want to have sex. He doesn't ask why. He just makes a statement. He may not have sex, but he doesn't care if he says it. He makes statements about what he believes, what he knows, what he wants, and he doesn't care.
He's
he doesn't.
Bold. He's bold.
He's bold. He's bold. Why do you love it though? Why do you love it? Why do women love that?
That he's bold.
Yeah. Why do women like bold, unapologetic boldness? Why do you love that?
Can't speak for all women, but for me, yeah. I like bold because that means a guy is showing up bigger, right? That he's not playing small and that he's not thinking small and that he tells me it. First of all, it's communication. I'm big on communication, right? I can't read your mind. I don't pretend to be able to read your mind. So if you don't tell me, I probably am not going to know. So I like people who just say it like it is. I've been told, Jessica, you have equal parts masculine and feminine energy, because I'm, very girly, but then I am very direct to get to the point, tell me like it is, I can take it, I'm okay. And that tends to be more a masculine trait, right? Most women don't like that. They don't resonate with that. And I'm like, action, come on, let's get to it. Let's go, go. Yeah. And so if he's like, hey, Jessica, this is what I want, or hey, let's do this, or it tells me how he's feeling. And she's like, hey, I'm horny. I want sex tonight. Okay, awesome. Great. Now we're on the same
good
page.
Good to know, yeah. Good to know. Good to know.
Other than that, I'm going to think we're on this page, and he's thinking we're on this page. And that just is, a hot mess and just leads to all kinds of catastrophe because we're not communicating. Whereas if he tells me, hey, I'm not guaranteeing you that we're having sex tonight. However, I'm glad to know that. I will do my best. Otherwise, if I don't know, I have no idea what he's thinking, So I like people who are bold. I like people who are bold. I like people who are courageous. I like people who put it out there. It shows a lot about people's character, and that's kind of me.
Yeah.
Probably why.
So can I ask you a separate related question?
Sure.
So let's assume the opposite. Let's assume the man in front of you, your romantic partner, has been tentative, wishy-washy, indecisive, uncertain, and just kind of an oozing puddle of mess. He's just a mush pile. How does it make you feel? I won't say all women, but how does it make you feel when you're around that energy too long, when he's there?
I wouldn't continue to be around that energy. Like, I just wouldn't. Like,
how does it make you feel, though? How does it make you feel? That's what I want to know.
I'm totally doing the tactic that my client does. I'm like, that's not what I asked. I asked you how it makes you feel, and here I'm like giving you a different answer. that's interesting. I don't know if I've ever really sat there and thought about how it makes me feel if someone does that. So let me think. I know I lose patience with it, and that's why I say I wouldn't stay in a relationship like that because I lose patience with it because it makes me feel that they're not really interested, that they don't really care. That it makes me feel not important and that I don't matter. I'm big on decisions, make a decision. So if somebody was wishy-washy and indecisive, they're not confident. It makes me feel, I don't know how it makes me feel, but to me they come off as very insecure and I don't want to be with someone who's insecure.
All right. So here's what a lot of wives tell me. They start use a lot of this.
Your question.
Well, no, I ask this question a lot of women. I do a lot of research, and some of the most popular words are the ones you said that I just don't like it. It doesn't feel right. But there's a word that they use a lot, which men don't understand. They'll say, "I feel unsafe." Not like they're going to be hurt, but I feel like a man who's indecisive, wishy-washy, and has no plan or direction or focus, makes me feel unsafe. I like I'm uncared for, like I'm not protected. I don't need protection from the world. I want to know that he can handle things. And
yeah.
I don't like the inconsistent feel. So feeling unsafe. And of course, if you feel unsafe, then you have a hard time respecting him. So if you feel a lack of respect, then you feel a lack of attraction, emotional, intellectual, and obviously physical attraction drains too. So we have to teach
unsafe
men that.
In what way, Steve? Unsafe in what way? Like from harm, like physical harm, or unsafe in security, like providing, like unsafe how?
first on security, right? If he's misdirected, focused, can't keep a job or has no plan, how do I know he can take care of us and the family? So there's that financial side. But there is also this, women have told me that sometimes we can go, if he's so mamby-pamby, wishy-washy, what if somebody broke in the house tonight? How could I even count on him to be the one to go downstairs instead of me? I hear women say that, and it's not that they're in imminent danger. It's just this weird thing that goes on in your head. In 2 seconds, you make a connection. If he's uncertain and wishy-washy, how can he, quote, protect me?
The difference for me, Steve, is as a single mom and as a woman who's been, you know, single a heck of a lot more than I've ever been in a relationship. And I use the term relationship loosely, never been in a long-term relationship. I don't count on a man to keep me safe. I don't count on a man to protect me. Because if that were the case, I would never be protected and I would never feel safe. So yeah. I think that may be the difference of why I don't resonate with the term unsafe in that situation.
Yeah.
Because I've never relied on a man for that. And here's what I also believe. I also believe that, you know, men, you know, yes, are physically more fit and stronger on average than women. So I definitely understand, like, immediate danger, how, you know, women depend on men to protect them physically if danger was at bay. But I think women need to look at protecting themselves, and I don't necessarily mean physically, but protecting themselves. I think that they need to count on themselves to feel secure. I don't think all of that always needs a default to men. Because again, if that were the case, I would never feel safe. I would never feel protected. I would be walking right around like a scared little girl for most of my right life. And so I say this because I think men automatically think that it's their place to do that because that's how they've been brought up. But I also think we need to empower women to do that more for themselves. That way it also takes the pressure and the stress off of men, that if for some reason they ever lost their job, they're not feeling worthless, helpless, hopeless, and that we as women can provide, we as women can protect, we as women can do all of those things, and it doesn't fall always on the man's shoulders, because I think that just puts more pressure and more stress on the man to do, to be, to give, and unnecessarily in a lot of situations. So I would love to empower women to take on some of that themselves, and to feel safe within themselves, and to feel that they can provide for their family.
Right. I love it. I think when you and I first talked, we mentioned Brené Brown, the shame researcher, and she talked about how women have yet to evolve to accept a man's vulnerability. Even she's a powerful, beautiful, feminine, smart woman whose husband came home and vented in the kitchen, and she heard herself going, I don't want to hear about this right now. I can't handle this right now. And she's going, holy crap, I am the patriarchy. I'm the one who's shutting down men's vulnerability. And you and I are on the same page. The most advanced, healthy, mutually loving relationship is where vulnerability is embraced on both sides, where a man can have a bad day. He can say, I'm feeling small today. I'm feeling unworthy today. And she doesn't take it as a threat to her well-being. Mm. And we have a long road to hoe here. We're just in the beginning stretches of this. And the reality tonight is a lot of men are going to go home to a woman who isn't you, right? Who isn't Jessica Rector or Brené Brown, who can't hear what's coming out of their head. And what they want to feel is more strength and directedness and focus from him first, so she can feel that. And this is the reality of the guys I work with. They're not in the best relationship. All they have to do is realize that they can't hold somebody else accountable for being perfect until they become the man they want to be. Mm-hmm. Even if she winds up in 30 years not being the woman next to him, right? You have to decide you're going to be who you want to be for you, because you feel good in that skin, and give that away. Give that away to her, to your kids, to your job. And
men so often is that women don't want me to be vulnerable. When I've cried in front of a woman, it makes them feel uncomfortable. They say, what are you doing? Stop crying. And I said, then you're not around the right women. Like, you keep being you. You keep doing you. Let them be them. If you being you makes them uncomfortable. If they don't like it, that's their issue. That's not yours. You own yourself. You take responsibility for what's yours to own and to take and let them do themselves. But don't stop being you just to try and please and be someone else. Oh my gosh, this has been so amazing, Steve. So tell us one thing that if a man is resonating with this or he may hear himself in this, what's one thing that he should start doing today outside of, yes, maybe connecting with the two of us, but what is one thing he can do in his life today?
Well, it starts with understanding self-reliance. I don't care if you're going to start researching books or podcasts on what self-reliance means, but self-reliance is the first thing he needs to think about and understand why he has been looking outside of himself for approval and validation and affirmation. That his happiness and his approval and everything good is inside. I know this is what you teach too. Just saying that though on a podcast isn't as important as him starting to get with other men or with other women who are talking about this. Putting himself in a place where he can vulnerably expose this conversation and start understanding that it's a myth. He has to put the glasses on that lets him see with a big grin on his face, this is bullcrap. This line I've been fed about me needing to make a happy wife to have a happy life or whatever, it's all inside me. So I would recommend that they realize self-reliance is the basis of every healthy relationship. You can't properly love anybody until you love yourself.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. Amen. Yes. Totally agree. So how can people find out more about you and where can they connect with you?
I'd say go to my website at goodguystogreatmen.com. There's a numeral two between there. goodguys2greatmen.com. There's a email box there. You put your email address in there. You'll get my free ebook, The Hard to Swallow Secret to Saving Your Marriage. And I do free consultations. I have a big video library and weekly emails as well. That be careful. If you sign up, you're going to get an avalanche of crap from me because I believe in giving value and serving men powerfully. So go to my website.
Wow. That is powerful. Oh my gosh, Steve, thank you so much. I have thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. I know like-minded, I could keep talking to you, like all day. So I appreciate you being here and serving our men in that way. Again, I'm Jessica Rector, host and founder of This Man Thing. You can find out more about us at thismanthing.com and also join our free Facebook group at thismanthing.com/groups. Join the real conversations we're having with men, and we're building community support and camaraderie with other men. We want to help you be authentic through your communication, thoughts, and actions to play bolder, think bigger, and be better to have more freedom, confidence, and success. So reach out and let us know how we can help you. Again, Jessica at thismanthing.com. And until next time, have a fabulous, amazing day. Bye-bye.